Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see, Representative Seltzer, if you wouldn't mind moving the minutes from the April 12th meeting.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from the April 12th meeting.
Thank you, and I'm so jealous you're sitting beside Gideon, my favorite new committee member.
I'm lucky today.
Thank you. All right, motion has been made to approve the minutes from April 12th. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Seltzer. All right, members, as previously announced, today is going to be devoted to public testimony on the DeLeetall Amendment to the Education Finance Supplemental Omnibus Bill, which we heard yesterday, House File 3858. We do have a very lengthy list of testifiers. We have reserved room for this evening to reconvene the committee if we recess. However, you know, if it's possible to get through the testimony today, I think a lot of people would be appreciative of that. So here's what I'm going to do. I am going to tell all public testifiers, we're going to use our clock, and you're going to get 2 minutes. That doesn't mean you need to take 2 minutes. If you are just speaking about something you're pleased about is in the bill, and you really need to say thank you or we're glad it's in, then you can. But what I would really like to do is people with concerns express those, so that I think members would be interested in knowing that. We do have a filing deadline of 5 o'clock today for amendments, so in order to help inform committee members' actions and that process, I think we'll want to allow a little more time for people who have a concern or a suggestion for a change. So with that, although if you want to heap praise on the bill, I guess I can't fight you away from the testimony table. But so that will be how we'll proceed. And our committee administrator has kept track of those who have indicated they wish to testify, and we'll just go through the list. At the end of that list, if there's others who wish to testify, just please come forward. So any comments or questions from committee members before we commence with testimony? All right, seeing none, I'm going to list three people, and this is more just to let you know who's up and who's on deck. So first will be Ben Gustafson, followed by Gary Amoroso, and then Sue Aberholden. And as you're coming down, if the other two want to kind of be either behind or close, if we can cut down on the time we wait for people to come down, that will help the process as well. And welcome, and to all testifiers, please state your name for the committee so we have that on the record before beginning your remarks. Welcome.
Chair Roon, members of the committee, my name is Ben Gustafson, and I work for a nonprofit community mental health center named Frazier. I want to thank you for including appropriations for school-linked mental health services located in Article 2, Section 71. Secondly, I would like to testify on behalf of the Help Me Grow initiative. The Help Me Grow initiative will help schools, physicians, and community partners identify children with developmental concerns at much younger ages. Frazier provides assessment services to about 4,000 children of all ages each year. We consistently hear frustration from families that their journey from time of first concern to time of diagnosis involves many unnecessary delays and disconnects in screening and referral. Frazier feels particular urgency that the Help Me Grow initiative moves forward this year, especially for autism. As you may have heard, the CDC recently issued a report on autism prevalence that found the U.S. has not made progress in lowering the age of identification of autism. We know that early intervention has a tremendously positive impact for children with autism and other mental health conditions, and is an opportunity that could greatly benefit both the education and healthcare systems. For these reasons, our hope is that your committee will include funding for the Help Me Grow initiative in your final budget. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Gustafson. Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Very quickly, Madam Chair, my mother always taught me I've got to say something nice before I have a concern. So there are so many parts of the bill that we are pleased that we're beginning to address. The broadband dollars for our school districts is very much appreciated, along with the dollars that are starting to look at the concept of how do we grow more teachers, how do we have more teachers within this state. So we're very pleased to have those pieces. So thank you for that.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Amoroso. No.
Thank you.
Kidding.
Mother always said that to us.
Please proceed.
Thank you, ma'am. The one concern, and Madam Chair, we're very grateful that you've discussed this with us, and I just want to share again, is regarding the teacher, the student discipline piece. We firmly embrace the concept that there's nothing more important than having a safe environment for our students and a safe environment for our teachers. Without those things in place, we cannot be as effective working with children, and our staff can't be as effective doing their jobs. But one of the concerns we have is the piece within the bill that does provide the teacher the opportunity to have a student removed from class. And what I don't see in there is what are the parameters for that, and that's a bit concerning. We have talked with the chair, and we appreciate the fact that she asked us to provide some possibilities, and we've done that. And we're hoping that we can continue to work with the chair and the committee to find some kind of common ground that will truly send the message to our teachers that we care, which we do, and that we want to make sure that they have a safe environment, while at the same time making sure that we are also needing to honor the rights of our students. And so hopefully there can be some common ground there. I look forward to working with you on it. And just very quickly, lastly, one thing that I know the chair had no control over with the target she was given, but we have not. There are no dollars in the bill that would have an impact across the board on with the 331 districts in the form of either something for the formula or something for the special ed cross-subsidy reduction. And again, we know that is not something that the chair had control over, but it was something that we believe is missing as we move forward. But with that, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And I just really want to thank you for the funding for the schooling to mental health grants. We are now in about 85% of the school districts and 45% of the school buildings, serving roughly 15,000 students a year. We appreciate the money so that we can really get closer to serving all the children. I also want to thank you for the funding for the staff development grants for the intermediate school districts and co-ops, the creation of the student discipline working group, and the funding for positive behavior intervention and supports. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Everholden. All right, so next up we have Elaine Keefe, Sam Walseth, and Scott Grunquist.
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, could I ask that if the people giving testimony have concerns, if they could follow up with having written sections that of their concern, because sometimes they are speaking rapidly, and I want to make sure I've got them all.
Okay, thank you. That's a good suggestion. And so anyone who's expressing specific concerns, if you want to share that with the committee, you could email that to the committee administrator. We'll send that out just so people can be certain, you know, which section of the bill you're referring to or which particular. And Ms. O'Keefe, if you did not wish to testify, I was getting waved off from it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. We won't make anyone testify today unless, of course, we run short of people to talk. Mr. Grunquist, so the next would be Erica Moss after him. All right, Mr. Walseth.
Okay. Madam Chair, Member Sam Walseth, on behalf of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, I'm here today to say thank you for the work you've done in the bill. I'm going to rattle through quickly a number of items in the bill that are going to help build capacity in rural schools to serve students in a number of different capacities. The inclusion of Representative Norna's bill on the Northwest Concurrent Enrollment Partnership is very important. Thank you. The Representative Swedzinski bill to create a paraprofessional to special education licensure program on the Southwest State. Thank you. Additional loan forgiveness to help another 1,000 FTE staff to help with their student loans is very appreciated. Staff development for level 4 programs for intermediates and rural cooperatives. School Link Mental Health Grants, as was mentioned, that really helps build capacity. It's a great program for getting that specialty service in greater Minnesota districts as well as in the Twin Cities. Mobile labs to create opportunities for kids in small schools where they can't readily buy that equipment. The broadband innovation money that you've got in there is of great interest as well. Some cleanup language around long-term facility maintenance from last year. So all those, thank you for that. I would just note, as Representative Murphy was making her comment, I did not bring the bill up with me, but I just say the capping of Pathway 2 funds in the scholarship program. We do hear from our rural school administrators about that Pathway 2 is a very viable approach to build capacity for early learning programs, so I do have a little concern about capping those dollars in the future. But, Madam Chair, thank you for the work. You heeded our call for a lot of projects this session, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth. Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And as Mr. Amoroso mentioned, and we also know that you certainly would have preferred for a more robust target than you received. And I'm sure all the members of the committee feel that way. And I definitely can tell you my membership was hoping for a more target that better reflected the important role public education plays in Minnesota. That said, we do appreciate the creativity you used to free up some money, and that did allow some worthy investments in your bill. The School Link Mental Health Grants, the staff development for the intermediate districts, the current enrollment, and the teacher shortage and teacher diversity issues are all very important, and we appreciate those. I do have to address concern about a couple of issues. Number one, bringing the non-metro up to the metro equity level, we just don't think that's the appropriate vehicle to address the equity issues. We would argue that money would be better invested in referendum equalization, where there clearly is inequity and where all of the districts across the state of Minnesota do rely on the operating referendum, and yet the impact on taxpayers varies widely. We think there's actually solid research and data that supports having two equity regions, and not the least of which would be the 25% to 30% labor cost differential between those various regions of the state. I would echo what Mr. Walseth said about the capping the Pathway 2. Again, we think that's just a great way to help our youngest learners, and so we would appreciate not having a cap on Pathway 2 scholarships. And then I just do have to, stop by mentioning the lack of funding for special education. That was the top priority identified by our board of directors, and they really felt like this was the year to do something there with a $900 million budget surplus for the state of Minnesota. They recognized that it wasn't a funding year. We knew, they know you had a two-year budget adopted last year, but if we're not going to start to address special education cross-subsidy in a year like this, then I guess we're not sure when we will ever do that. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Ms. Moss. And before you start, I'll just say who's scheduled next. Susan Freevalds, and I apologize if I don't pronounce your names correctly. Anastasia Belladonna. And Kaying Yang. All right, welcome.
Madam Chair and members, Erica Moss, Parent Aware for School Readiness. I would like to thank the Chair for the inclusion of funding for Parent Aware in the proposed budget. That increased investment means that more early care and education providers all around the state will have support in offering the children they serve kindergarten readiness best practices, and more children ages 0 to 5 will benefit from those best practices. A few of the policy things in the bill: we do support the language expanding the availability of scholarships to more at-risk children, families experiencing homelessness in the child protection system or in foster care, and those children being allowed higher dollar amount scholarships. In terms of addressing issues with Pathway 2, I'd like to call out our support for ensuring that children who receive scholarships have the ability to move their scholarship when their family relocates because of a change in home or a job. This kind of portability helps ensure strong outcomes and limits disruption and early learning continuity for young kids. And we support the extension of the deadline for programs to move up to 3 or 4 star rating by 2020. As I testified previously in committee, there are about half of Minnesota's counties only had Parent Aware available for the first time in 2015. That in particular gives those providers more time to move up. And of the last group of providers to move through the rating system, 82% of them did move up. So we think with more time and the support provided by this investment, providers will move up to higher star levels. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Ms. Freybold?
Freybold.
Freybold. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Susan Freybold from the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. First off, I want to thank you for including an appropriation for the council in your budget this year. With this one-time appropriation, we'll be able to extend our programs of professional development in economics and personal finance into greater Minnesota and, in fact, make them more accessible for all teachers throughout Minnesota. With this one-time appropriation, we'll prepare online courses prepared specifically with the needs of Minnesota teachers in mind, aligned to our academic standards and including pedagogy and curriculum. A core of master teachers will support these courses by providing help with classroom implementation and also offering face-to-face courses throughout the state. Last summer, responding to the need and the demand, our board of directors dipped into our fund balance to begin to get these programs ready to roll. But, of course, this is not something that a nonprofit can continue to do, and, in fact, our board won't be able to do that anymore. So without an appropriation this year, these programs will just stall, and teachers will once more need to find the time and the funding to come to St. Paul. And as you might imagine, this provides an insurmountable barrier for many teachers, particularly those from greater Minnesota. So once again, I thank you for your inclusion of our appropriation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Freybold. All right, Ms. Belladonna, and then Kaying Yang, and then Joshua Crossan. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share some very important information with you. Some of them stem from concerns, but in general, we are very supportive of the work that's demonstrated in the bill, the omnibus bill, and also with the work that each one of you have done with regards to applying an equity lens to some of the policy that's come from the committee. I'm very appreciative of that. Having said that, I wanted to start with the general statement that Latino community in Minnesota trails the majority non-Latino white population in many important indicators. Some of them are economic well-being, including employment, income, and wealth accumulation. And as you can see, at the base of these is the importance of what education and academic achievement works within that dynamic. The reason why I'm bringing this to your attention is because of provisions within the bill that speak to the disaggregation of data and education and performance factors. For our Latino population in the state of Minnesota, that's a very important aspect of being able to identify innovative but very effective ways of trying to narrow that achievement gap. For example, some relevant facts. On the national level, some of you may have recently known that Latinos actually and unfortunately have the achievement of the least graduation rate in Minnesota on a national level. Approximately 74,818 students of Minnesota identify as being Latino, about 8.7%. But the diversity within each one of that category of Latino is growing by bounds. In the state of Minnesota, there's roughly about 70% of Latino students that speak another language other than English. But to that, we add the dynamic within that section that involves those Latino people that don't speak Spanish or English because they speak their native dialects. This is something that we see in our Guatemalan population in southern Minnesota, but it's not a dynamic unique to the Guatemalan population. Latino students are more likely to attend high schools that do not offer advanced courses in math and science compared to white and Asian students. Latinos are likely to be underrepresented in the state STEM workforce relative to the numbers in the working age population, and they are nationally. And I throw in some of those global numbers in there so that we can see how some of the more specific aspects in education impact some of those larger global factors. Fourth grade MCA proficiency for reading and math for Latino students in the state of Minnesota are both below 50%. And although recently we've done some gains in that area, we still need to keep that longer historical perspective, because again, we're talking about the importance of disaggregation of data and understanding how our Latino students fall within that. The NAEP proficiency for Latino fourth graders in 2013, as an example, was 23 and 24 respectively. For our Latino students, these performance indicators vary even more by school district and Greater Minnesota region. Why is the disaggregation of data so important for Latino students in Minnesota? Because there's about 20 Latin American countries globally and 6 dependent territories. The state of Minnesota is home, depending on what source you see, to anywhere between, I want to make sure, 12 to 15 calling Minnesota their home.
All right, and Ms. Belladonna, I'm going to ask you to wrap because I let you go along. Thank you.
I'm going to provide a copy of our written policy statement. And to wrap it up then, Madam Chair, thank you again for the opportunity. But I do want to present a question to the members of the committee with regards to the concern that is now the right time, or should we wait for the federal through ESSA to impose that on the state? I would ask the committee to really consider, given some of these performance factors, how long is our Latino students supposed to wait? And should they really be made to bear the burden of administrative issues or inconveniences or logistics from a state or a federal perspective? I thank you so much, Madam Chair, the committee, for your hard work. I look forward to continuing working with the committee and making sure that our Latino students do achieve academically in the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Yang.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Kaying Yang. I am the senior policy fellow at the Coalition for Asian Americans. CAL is a network of 500 Asian Minnesotans working on community priorities to ensure equity is achieved for Asian Americans in our state. Today, I want to speak to the importance of data disaggregation, and I want to thank you for including sections of that in the omnibus bill. For Asian Minnesotans, ensuring our inclusion in equities discussions means having the ability to see and understand more nuanced data. When we are lumped into the aggregate category of Asians, our community's disparities are hidden. As you may already know, Asian Minnesotans comprise the state's youngest population with a median age of 29. This is significantly younger than the average Minnesotan age of 38. We are also the fastest growing community in the state and in the country. Since 2000, we have grown by 76% in Minnesota to a population of 256,000 with 40 different cultural communities. Furthermore, 60% of our Asian American populations are Southeast Asian Americans who are refugees or descendants of refugees. This is unlike any other state's Asian population, where Southeast Asians are a much smaller proportion of the population. When it comes to education-specific data, the U.S. Department of Education asserts that Minnesota's overall on-time graduation rates for students of color across racial lines puts it directly at the bottom of all 50 states. For Asian Americans, we rank 46 out of 50 states for on-time graduation rates. In addition, Minnesota currently holds the highest average ACT score in the nation, 23. But for Asian students, even at the aggregate level, hold a significantly lower average ACT score of 18. Unfortunately, neither the U.S. or Minnesota's Department of Education require data collection beyond the aggregate label of Asian. Therefore, data for specific ethnic groups, the ethnic community, is not available across the state or at the majority of school districts where there are large Asian American populations. Incomplete data leads to misunderstandings about Asian Americans and other racial groups. What unique needs exist, and what community assets may be uplifted to solve community challenges? This is a disservice to Asian American communities, as the most vulnerable are left behind. Resources are wasted and assets go unrecognized and unappreciated. Therefore, we support efforts to ensure data disaggregation is conducted and supported to include accurate and good information about Asian Americans and other diverse groups to achieve racial equity in Minnesota. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Crossan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joshua Crossan, and I'm with MNCAN, an education advocacy group that ensures that all kids have a great public education. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership on including a data disaggregation provision in your legislation. It's a robust provision, and as I can't say it any better than Anastasia or Kaying, but at kind of giving you an understanding of what this provision actually does. Currently, Minnesota clumps its student data into 6 ethnic and racial groups: Black, White, Native American, Hispanic, Asian Pacific Islander, and mixed race. These are, and to kind of give you an idea of why this is problematic, if you look at student proficiency estimates, the lowest performing or the lowest achieving student group in the state is actually Burmese or Karen refugees. The highest performing in the state are South Asian, East Asian kids. And those two communities are lumped together into one ethnic group in the state. So this legislation finally allows us to see how separate ethnic and racial groups, are doing. Also, this bill looks at English language learners. Right now, students can test out of the English language learner classification. We capture that data for a couple years, but they're no longer considered English language learners. This legislation allows the state to finally capture data on kids that are testing out of English language learners and tracking those kids through data throughout their years or throughout their schooling. I'd also like to note that the implementation date of this legislation is really amazing in that it looks at the 2017-2018 school year. This is well ahead of the ESSA regulations and the state plans that are due at the end of during the summer at the end of this year. So it allows us plenty of time to start looking at how we intend to disaggregate student data further. Another issue that we're really thankful for the chair for including is our issues around school discipline. I'd like to thank Madam Chair and the Governor for including robust funding for PBIS, and also there have been. MNCAN is also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, and this is a coalition that is comprised of parents, students, communities of colors, teachers unions, etc. And the working group in the Chair's bill includes these communities. It's a robust and diverse community. So I'd like to thank the Chair for creating an inclusive working group. And lastly, I'm thrilled to see the commitment to curbing teacher shortages in this bill. The targeted investments in Grow Your Own, alternative certification programs, and traditional preparation programs, as well as loan forgiveness, will help bring more and more diverse teachers into the classroom. So thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and I'm around for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Crossan. All right. Next up, I have Brad Lindell, Annette Misagi, Josh Downham.
Madam Chair, Brad Lindell, I'm going to be speaking on behalf of four groups today, so do I get 8 minutes?
No.
Couldn't help but try. First of all, as Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education, I want to thank you for all the work you've done. This committee's worked very, very hard. We do like that equity bump that for the non-metro districts. We think that's the equity formula is kind of something that needs to have a great overhaul, but I think this is a good place to start. I think what Mr. Kroonquist said about referendum equalization is something to look forward to in future years to help continue to smooth out disparities that exist within districts. Also, the $240,000 for QCOM for Ricori and Cold Spring to make sure they're fully funded. Both are C members. We're very happy for that. Representative Peterson's bill and Representative Fenton's bill that will allow more flexibility for transferring between funds certainly testified in favor of that, and again, our support for that is very, very strong. Things like school, the link, mental health, and those things as well that I've talked about that we're in favor of. The other thing, I guess the things that we're concerned about from Steve's perspective is that on the school discipline working group, we're not a participant. We certainly would want to be a participant. There's no money for TD&E, what was in the governor's bill. We think that is something that is a gap right now, one of the largest equity gaps, and we'd certainly want to have money going forward to try to help those districts that aren't participating in QComp. Also then, from the perspective of the Minnesota Association of Special Educators or Administrators of Special Education, the PBIS, which has been talked about, very, very important. We do support that. Want to give another boost to Representative Slocum's bill on the 25% paperwork reduction. I want to make clear this is not another investigation of where we go beyond federal. As a state, this is about the paperwork, and this is about the amount of paperwork that's required. I think that the key thing here is we need to have a discussion with the State Department of Education, the monitoring compliance section, as to what they are actually looking for and what school districts can do to comply with that. Also with MACE, not in the school discipline working group, and also there's the article language from Article 4, Section 3, that was in the governor's bill that talks about the third-party payment. We think that that language should be put into your bill. There's no fiscal implications to that. The other thing then, in my work with the school psychologists and school social workers, we really want to thank the organization or the committee for putting in the language on the crisis response teams that was in your bill last year and funding that. We view that as very important. From their perspective, though, there's a few concerns about the student survey. I think there's a way we can balance what we need to get in terms of information with the privacy concerns that have been expressed. And I think that we would like to work with the committee to try to find a happy medium there, if a happy medium is indeed possible. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Lindell. And I'll just remind you, if you, per our discussion with Representative Murphy, want to email any of those specifics to the committee, we'd appreciate that. Thank you. Ms. Masagi.
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nanette Masagi, new director of the Collaborative Urban Educator Program at the University of St. Thomas. We are grateful to the committee for recognizing the value of the Q program. Our four schools have been the state's longstanding partners in developing, graduating, and retaining American Indian and teachers of color, and have over 20 years expertise in this field of teacher education. Our schools have considered how we might best use a one-time influx of additional funding. What is most important to us is that we use these funds to provide scholarships and circles of support so our students become licensed teachers who stay in Minnesota. It is our top priority that our students can rely on this funding the state has provided us for more than 20 years. We look forward to continuing the conversation on how best to recruit, graduate, and retain American Indian and teachers of color, especially how our programs can share our insight and expertise in this area with other newer programs that are also working to increase in diversity in Minnesota's teacher force.
Thank you very much. All right. Josh Downham? He's here. All right. And if you're not here at the moment, we can come back to you if you come later. Is Tony Santa here? Not yet. Okay. Glasses. Joanne Winter? Barbara Cox? Jean Iverson? Yeah. How about if... is Joanne Winter here? Okay, so why don't we do or the rest, or I think the next grouping is associated with the Perpich parent. So, okay, all right. So why don't all the people that want to testify in Perpich come down, and we'll do all that all together. Welcome, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We will be very brief because many of you have heard testimony from these and other people in support of this initiative. And I would really like to thank you for including this provision in your bill. I have a statement from a former teacher of Crosswinds that I could read if that would be of interest, and several testifiers with a variety of experiences related to Perpich and or Crosswinds. I would ask each of them to simply give their names and the relationship to Perpich and why they support the bill. And then if committee members have questions, they may direct them to the expert that's here.
Thank you. Welcome. And please just each of you state your names before you begin your remarks. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Joanne Winter. I'm a former teacher of Perpich from 1990 to 2003, but I'm also a retired field staff representing the teachers under the umbrella of the Perpich Agency. I'm here today because it is my belief and my interest that better communications about the agency and the vested folks involved is improved through a board that is open and willing to talk with all constituents and all members of the community. That has been thwarted in the last 12 and a half years that I was a rep. Prior to that, that was not my experience as an educator. Teachers, administrators, community members, our Professional Development Institute, we were always talking together about how we could do a better job, and we did. So I'm asking you also to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winter. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Jeannie Iverson. I was the librarian from the beginning of the Purpich Center in 1989 through until my retirement in 2012. I care very much about the Purpich Center, and I'm here specifically to speak to my concerns about the state of things in the Purpich Center Library at this time. In August 2015, this amazing library of very unique arts and arts education materials, as well as a significant collection of diverse multicultural materials, was unexpectedly moved from its location at the in the Arts High School area to another building off campus. This was the result of excessive rain that had come in to the building, and so it was necessary to box up the collection and move it away. Unfortunately, there is not room for the entire collection in the current state that it's housed in. And this library not only serves the students at the Arts High School, but the residents all across Minnesota. It was not uncommon to have visitors come in every week from as far away as Hellier, people from St. Cloud, Albert Lee. They were here, they were at the Purpich Center for workshops, or they came to make direct checkout of our materials. We were also linked to a system of interlibrary loan, so making this collection accessible was important. Right now, a major part of the collection that was used by those people is boxed up and in a separate room, not available. And so that is a primary concern that I have, that that collection be accessible and available again to the public and the Arts High School students. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Barbara Hackett Cox, and I, up until last June of 2015, I was an employee of the Purpich Center's Professional Development Institute, worked collaboratively with Jeannie on the library resources. I was one of five education specialists who had been there for quite some time, and it wasn't so much about us as the particular people in the positions, it's about the positions and what the positions were created to do. The five specialists included four art-specific expertise, so we had a specialist for each art area as per our statute to provide professional and technical support to art educators across the state, K through 12. My part of my specialist position was to develop multicultural resources, the Multicultural Voices Initiative. I was the coordinator of that, which created a very strong network, statewide network, of academics, scholars, also teachers, educators, artists, and arts organizations and cultural organizations. That really was a strong network that helped us to address many of the things that have been addressed before our presentation, which is creating not only a diverse, artistically and culturally diverse resource, network resource of people, but also the resources and materials that are can be vetted and be implemented in classrooms. Much of that the library materials are not available statewide now. They're in boxes. I go in, even though I'm not an employee anymore, I am somebody that uses the library. The technical support for the teachers across the state, both in terms of arts and non-arts areas, we worked in a variety of ways. We provided a multi-year in-depth professional development for arts and non-arts teachers and arts community arts resources. We also worked and presented at conferences and maybe presented information to 300 people or perhaps a smaller working session of maybe 40 people. This staff of five, those positions had far reach around the state and really did connect with many, many teachers. with those, there is now only one of the education specialists position left, and that is the visual and media arts person. The technical and professional support for the other arts areas is currently not happening. The CAP program, which was run by any one of the specialists, is actually suspended, and that is part of our statute, as well as some of the other programming that is not happening because of the elimination of these positions. I support this bill because it can only improve and get the Purpich Center back to what it was originally created to do. And I thank you for considering this and for listening to all this presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Scott.
In closing, I just want to say that the Professional Development Institute did meet one-third of the mission of this agency, and that mission is no longer being met.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Lorraine Mills, and I'm a parent of a former Crosswind student. I just want to express that over the past 2 years, we attempted to speak with the board and express our concerns about leadership with Purpich and with Crosswinds, and encountered being dismissed and also encountering a lot of silence from the board. As parents at the school, we were expected to listen and do what the administration directed us to do, which typically was to suppress our participation and our voice. One thing I want to mention is about integration. Crosswinds is a school of voluntary integration, and I was very excited to have my daughter be a part of that type of school. However, I quickly found out that Crosswinds is no longer equipped to appropriately tend to those needs. In the past, staff were trained, and the integration of students would happen purposely until it happened organically, working through the arts. The current staff has been denied training, and many do not understand the needs of diverse populations in integration. The school has transitioned from a respectful student model to a disciplinary model. Several students have become aware of these, and they made some posts on Google Maps about some of these tensions that were occurring in the school. So I ask that you support these provisions within the education bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Miles.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Brittany Edwards. I'm a 2000 alum of the Purpich Center. My 2013 Humphrey thesis was a program evaluation plan of the administration and governance of the center based on the advice of Legislative Auditor Jim Nobles and then Representative Steve Simon. Rudy and Lola Purpich are personal heroes of mine and inspired a career of public service, including Peace Corps and my current work in evaluation at Hennepin County. Based on my interviews of many stakeholders of the center and review of over a decade of board minutes and supplemental materials, including feedback from the unions and representing employees there, it is apparent that board changes are essential immediately. I strongly support Representative Ward's bill and Representative Mariani's amendment to that bill. And I have my thesis that I can submit as testimony for review, but I strongly believe that the changes need to happen, and the legislative auditor has offered suggestions to Representative Ward about about this bill, and so I don't think it's too soon, and in fact it's been 7 years in coming. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I want to just reiterate that our purpose is to make Purpich strong again, to be what it can be for the state as an agency and an asset. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up, Karen Walters. Scott. Helen. Sandra Samuels. Welcome.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Karen Walters. I am the Legislative Committee Chair for Literacy Action Network and the Program Coordinator for Mankato Area Adult Basic Education. Literacy Action Network is the statewide organization representing 44 ABE consortia that serves approximately 70,000 learners annually. Statewide, 80% of the ABE population in Minnesota is low income, people of color, and of refugee and immigrant status. LAN opposes Article 7, Section 5, Subdivision 2 of the Educational Omnibus Bill that allocates $400,000 to three specifically named nonprofit agencies that provide ABE programming to adults in Minnesota. Never before in the ABE statute has funding been allocated to specifically named ABE providers. Under the governance of the Minnesota Department of Education, Adult Basic Education Consortia work together in a system that values program partnerships and works collaboratively to ensure student success through accountability to local school districts. Article 7, Section 5, Subdivision 2 provides additional funding outside of the formula to three agencies that have chosen not to be part of the ABE consortium. This goes against that collaborative philosophy. LAN supports the current funding formula that was designed to ensure statewide access to ABE services for students, not to assure the validity of or fund individual providers. It has worked well for over 15 years and is very broadly supported by ABE stakeholders statewide. Literacy Action Network's members have concerns that this is not just a financing bill, it is significant policy change and sets a precedent for other agencies to come forward to you one by one in the future, thereby weakening partnerships, program accountability, and the ABE system as a whole. Most adult basic education programs have to make difficult financial decisions. Many of our programs seek local or state grant funds for newer innovative programming ideas, and this provides the opportunity for cross-system collaboration. Most programs would tell you that they could do more with additional funding. In fact, we have seen other programs close their doors who could not sustain. We hope that the committee will consider the following as they discuss the amendment. The provision was introduced as a bill but never heard in the committee. What is the innovative programming and how does this truly differ from regular ABE services offered across the state system? And if this bill passes, what would prevent other nonprofits from asking the legislature for special funding in the future? And if they did, how would the legislature refuse them in all fairness? LAN asks that you not support the special funding. By eliminating this section, you will support your Minnesota adult learners by assuring program accountability, encouraging cross-agency collaboration, and using funds efficiently. Thank you for the opportunity to present our concerns.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I, too, am here to speak about 106.23, Subdivision 2, Adult Basic Ed. My name is Scott Helland. I'm here representing MCA, the Minnesota Community Education Association, Adult Basic Education Coordinator for Metro East Consortium. I'd like to share several concerns about the provision in the E-12 finance bill that provides funding for three ABE programs outside of how the state currently funds ABE. The first concern is that we already have a formula in place to fund ABE programs, as was discussed. For over 15 years, the funding formula has been built to ensure ABE students access across the state. The second concern is that the ABE funding formula is designed to ensure that statewide access, but not to fund individual partner providers. The bill creates a system of handpicking certain ABE providers to be funded with a different method and a different rate over others. This bill does so without a competitive grant process, which sets a dangerous and confusing precedent. This would mark the first time that any individual provider was named in the statute to receive special ABE funding. Without a competitive grant process, the question could be asked, what was the criteria for these programs to be chosen over others? Third concern is that with a one-year appropriation for the bill, or for the subdivision piece, in the future, it may be decided to take funding from the general ABE fund. And if that were to happen, that would affect every program in the state by lowering their current appropriation. Other programs with financial difficulties have not received special state funding and have had to make cuts to their program, much as a family makes cuts to their budget and to live within their means. Consortiums across the state have had to make adjustments when needed to address financial constraints. In summary, we already have a funding formula which has worked well for 15 years. The current bill stands counter to the intent of that statute to ensure statewide access by hand-selecting several programs to receive funding in a different method and rate, and also a one-year appropriation may not be sustainable, and would that funding future financing jeopardize the statewide delivery system which assures access to ABE learners across Minnesota? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Gaither, would you like to come down? And then Sandra Samuels, if she's here, will be after Mr. Gaither.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Gaither. I'm the director of the International Education Center. I have with me representatives from the deaf community and from the Indian community who are also mentioned in the legislation. I'd like to react to the earlier testimony just straight up and quickly. The funding formula, as it was presented to you, implies that all of us share in that funding formula. That's inaccurate. Of four variables included in the ABE funding formula, our three organizations receive one of the four funding formulas, one variable. The other three variables, although we qualify because we serve adults over 20 with no diploma, the students who have English limited proficiency, and minority students, we are not included in that. 15 years ago, we were not at the table when this formula was constructed. We have gone forward with the Department of Education and with Literacy Action Network to rectify this problem, this inequitable problem. We've received the same conversation. It works for us. It may not work for you. That's too bad. We are here to recognize and appreciate a significant step going forward to address this inequity. We wouldn't be here if the formula applied to everybody the same way. It simply doesn't. Again, whether it was an act of omission or an act of commission, it's a debatable issue. The facts are that our organizations simply receive significantly less than other organizations in the state who provide the same services to the same group of people. In addition, the results that we receive, and our program and my program, exceed the statewide averages of the 11 variables of levels of success by 8 of the 11. We are better than most and as good as any. We serve 600 to 1,000 newly arrived immigrants and refugees every year in the state of Minnesota, in the downtown metropolitan area. Our students come to us because it's a culturally significant, involved organization. There are people who are like them, with similar backgrounds, similar concerns, similar life experiences. We are not asking for something that's new and different. We aren't asking for something that's more. We're actually asking for somewhat less than what we should be getting if the formula was accurate. So, Madam Chair and members, I encourage you to support this initiative. It's a good step forward in resolving this issue, and I would look forward to working with other stakeholders next year in resolving the formula on a long-term, ongoing basis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Erin Gucci, and I'm the statewide program coordinator for Communication Services for the Deaf in Minnesota. And I provide services throughout the state for all of Minnesota deaf and hard of hearing adults through the entire state. We serve 70 to 100 students every year, and we provide them with an equal access opportunity to improve themselves and to become taxpaying citizens, and so that they can be employable. It's very important for us to get this support because the adult basic education program and the system itself, as far as with deaf individuals, they all get referred to us. It doesn't matter where they are in the state. And so we have students throughout the entire state that we need to serve. And we have a small budget and we have only 60,000 deaf and hard of hearing people throughout the state of Minnesota. And we serve a small percent of those. So we need to have more funding. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for considering this and listening to me.
Thank you very much. Ms. Heldon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nancy Hilden, and I am speaking today on behalf of Joe Hobart of the American Indian OIC, who is also working in collaboration with a northern partner, the Northwest Indian Community Development Center, formerly the Northwest Indian OIC in Bemidji. And they strongly agree with what you've already heard. Ironically, they're over speaking in the disparities hearing in the Senate at this moment, so I'm here. And really, this is about treating these community-based organizations similarly to other institutions. And I think there's a heightened sensitivity, especially in the American Indian community, to not just suggesting that these individuals go to an institution which has a very sordid history with their community. So this is an effective way for them to get this training, and they very much appreciate your support.
Thank you. All right. Is Sandra Samuels here?
She's on her way.
On her way. Okay. So we'll move her down, and when she gets here, she can testify. I'm sorry if I don't pronounce this right. Marika Pfefferkorn? Robin Francis? Sonia Lewis? Oh, and Holly's Winston. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. It's a privilege to sit before you today. It's been an intense year managing and moving forward discipline as a priority in all of legislation that touches education. And so today we just want to come in support of the overall bill, but specifically highlight some sections that we are specifically really excited to see included. And thank you for making sure that they do show up.
And I'm sorry, could you please state your name for us?
My name is Marika Pfefferkorn. I'm the director at the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, and I'm a co-chair of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, which is made up of 37 organizations and individuals who are educators, youth, parents, teachers, lawyers, all working to address discipline disparities across the state of Minnesota. And so today we're here in support of the positive behavior intervention support that the governor and Madam Chair that you put forth, the $2.7 million, to really increase the support for positive behavior interventions and supports. This is something that we as a coalition have been promoting and pushing and educating the community on, and really believe that because it is an evidence-based practice, it is critical that we not only put this $2.7 million towards increasing building capacity, staffing capacity to really implement and integrate, but this is just a really good positive step forward in addressing discipline in an asset-based manner. I'd also like to congratulate this working group that is included in this around the Fair Pupil Dismissal Act, and we are excited that we are going to have a collective of legislators and others that are going to be discussing the Fair Pupil Dismissal Act. But we're excited that you have included a number of organizations and agencies that originally were not a part of the of that bill. And so I just want to reiterate that it is critical that we have the parents, we have students, we have communities of color, and those that have really been working on discipline disparities at large over the past several years to be at that table. It is really critical that the most impacted folks are part of the solution. And we have parents and community members that have been coming together for solutions, and they're ready to share them at the table with this working group. So we strongly encourage you to maintain the level and even increase the representation of communities of color in the working group, the discipline working group. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Francis, and I want to testify in support of this bill. I have been in education for the past 20 years, ranging from classroom teacher to building principal, as well as a product of the Q program. The urgency of getting PBIS in place is now. Building staff want this framework in their buildings to support positive behavior intervention systems, and it is an effective way to if it's properly supported, funded appropriately, and implemented with fidelity, PBIS can truly work and schools can see the benefits. Also, the discipline work group is a great effort, and again, to second what Marika just stated, it's so important to have those missing voices at the table. So again, thank you for being more inclusive of that group. And lastly, as a principal, I feel the opportunity for teachers to remove students for any reason would cause a loss of autonomy for our school leaders. So that's just something I want us to be mindful of. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. And then Sonia Lewis.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the community. My name is Sonia Lewis, and I am a Minneapolis parent. I have two sons in the Minneapolis Public School District. First, I wanted to thank you, and I wholeheartedly support the funding for $2.7 million to support PBIS, for I feel that it provides supports to schools to develop strategies and plans to better align positive behavior and learning in the school and in the classroom. From what I understand, that there's also a discipline working group, and as a parent, I think that it is critical, as a parent and a parent of color that has two children of color in Minneapolis public school districts, I think that it is imperative, that it is critical for communities that have been most affected by this, that we need to be at the table and have voice in these discussions. And I, as a parent, would be willing to be able to share my stories and to be able to be at the table. So thank you very much for this and for giving us an opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the community. Of the committee. My name is Hollis Winston. I live in Brooklyn Park, so I have a daughter who is in the Anoka County district, and a son who's in Hennepin. And I guess PBIS is important to me because I have a son. I've had some incidents where my son is does very well on tests, does very well in school, but he's kind of willful. So he's 10 years old, not always the most agreeable. And luckily, he had some teachers who, instead of suspending him, worked with him, just to kind of work with his behavior, instead of just putting him on suspension and having him fall behind in school. I think that's made a big difference in terms of how he looks, at how willing the school is to support him, how the teachers feel about him. So he's continuing to do well in school, which is important to me and important to his future. So, you know, that's why I really support, the $2.7 million and just in getting behind, that part of the budget. As far as, the working group, I would say it's always important to have the community there, especially in a time where people don't always know what's going on in terms of what's going on with the government dollars. And I think it's important that if you're going to tackle that something that's so important to the community, it's just important to have everybody from the community there. I know there's going to be a lot of good people at the table, but it's always helps to have the community there just so everybody knows and for transparency's sake. So thank you, everybody, for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. All right, and Ms. Samuels, I see you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry for being late. Good afternoon, Chair Loon and members of the committee. My name is Sandra Samuels, and I am President and CEO of the Northside Achievement Zone, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Education Partnerships Coalition. And the coalition presented to this committee earlier this session, and as you may recall, it consists of both NAS, the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, Every Hand Joined in Red Wing, Northfield Promise in Northfield, Partners for Student Success in St. Cloud, and we understand that that you have a difficult target and many competing priorities. However, we are disappointed that you have not chosen to support the important work we're doing to continue. You already are supporting us, and I want to thank you for that. To close the achievement gap in the communities around Minnesota, the reason we think it's so important is that we really can't leave any children behind, and I think you all, as you know, we're all locally driven, we're data driven, locally controlled, working in our communities and really meeting the needs of the children who are most left behind. And it's not just a rural problem, Greater Minnesota problem or a Twin Cities problem, it is a state problem. And we are providing some incredible solutions. And so what we're hoping is that you will reconsider and just know that the state support really helps us to leverage other funding sources. The federal government, when speaking personally for the Northside Achievement Zone, 5 years ago, the federal government invested $26 million in North Minneapolis to eradicate the achievement gap, focused on creating great schools,
at the center of the community, surrounded by strong community and parent support, and that's what we've been doing. And we've been having incredible outcomes around early childhood readiness, around our children advancing more rapidly in core subjects, parents re-engaging in community, or even for the first time, and low-income, particularly communities of color, in ways that they just hadn't before. And because of the federal government's investment and then your investment leveraging that, which the federal government investment ends at the end of the year, we've had corporations, because, you know, $26 million is going away, so which has been over the last, for NAS, over the last 5 years, about $5 million a year for us. And so we started sustainability planning as soon as we got the grant. And because of that, corporations like Target and General Mills have stepped up in a significant way, but they've done that over the course of years. So the last large grant we received from them was over a three-year period, which has been with most of our funders who know that replacing $5 million for a community like ours is not something that has ever been done without, again, public and private support, and that's what you all would provide. And you have been a real catalyst in other communities like Northfield. Because of the support, they've been able to increase the community involvement. And, you know, there they work with disproportionately Latino children with incredible success rate of getting them ready for college. And none of what we're doing would be able to continue or go deeper or expand without your support. So in closing, we really can't afford to scale back. What we are doing is working. We want to keep doing it. We want to prove the concept that we have, that it will work for all of Minnesota. It is working. And we want Minnesota to be great again in terms of education for all of our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cindy Christ and Aaron Doan. And I don't know if Mr. Downham has been here. We'll still have time, so if he shows up later.
The
okay, still in the Senate. All right. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Cindy Christ with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. We want to thank you for focusing this bill on the teacher shortage, especially the extent to which you focused funding on students, regardless of where they are in their path to achieving licensure. This includes the Future Teachers Grant Program, which, although its dollars will flow initially to teacher preparation institutions, is designed to primarily get those dollars into the hands of students in the form of financial aid and other support. Our programs would love to get the money for themselves, but it's more important to get it to the students. We're also very excited by the grants for student teachers, a population of people who have chosen to pursue a teaching career, but are too often stopped on that path by the inability to afford completing student teaching, and also for several approaches to helping paraprofessionals achieve licensure. We do have two concerns about bill provisions. The first, which I've previously addressed, is minor in comparison to some others, but I think still worth noting. And that is the provision within the expanded Q funding in Section 50 of Article 2 that specifies that at least half of the funding must be targeted to alternative and non-conventional programs. While we applaud increased funding to prepare more diverse teachers, we wonder why you wouldn't want the commissioner to be able to fund the very best proposals submitted, regardless of the path those programs have followed to approval. Given the extent, the intent to expand programs to help prepare a more diverse cadre of teachers for Minnesota classrooms, the language as written is unlikely to maximize progress toward that goal. A focus on non-conventional programs, we believe, is well-meaning, but seems to reflect a lack of understanding about those programs. There are nine of them. They're the DELIGHT program, which is an online pathway to elementary licensure, the Fast Track program, which is an online pathway to secondary licensure, the Natrona, which is an online special ed program delivered in Casper, Wyoming. Those three programs are offered by Bemidji State. They also include Winona State's Teacher Preparation Collaborative, which is also designed to help candidates in Rochester build licensure on top of a baccalaureate degree, secondary licensure, and also their elementary program in Rochester with a STEM focus. In addition to the Mandarin Immersion Program, two UMTC Grow Your Own type programs and the Twin Cities Consortium. As a reminder, all of these non-conventional alternative programs are offered by NACD institutions, our institutions. So our concerns are no reflection on the quality or value of those programs, but rather in what we see as an unnecessary limitation on funds intended to advance the important goal of increasing teacher diversity in Minnesota. Our institutions, all of them, are willing to compete on equal footing with other teacher preparation programs for these funds. The more problematic provisions from our perspective, it's interesting that I'm sitting here with Ms. Doan, because I haven't consulted with her about this, but we were particularly concerned with some of the language focused on new actions by and responsibilities for the Board of Teaching, which seemed to us to be premature, given your plans to have a legislative study group respond to the OLA report. The language in Article 2, Section 19, we find particularly troublesome, not in its substance so much as in its timing. While we agree with OLA that the Board of Teaching is the appropriate entity to be the locus of all licensing work, we don't see how the provisions outlined here can be immediately undertaken by the board and its staff, which I believe is inherent in the language of the bill. And correct me if I'm wrong about that, please. But we wonder, will the current staff of educator licensing immediately begin to report to the board? How will they deal with budget work assignments and reportability? These will take time to shape and implement, and we fear that the board will be unable to do all of the critical work that needs to be done without time and funding to reshape itself to fulfill these new duties along with its current ones. So while we appreciate your sense of urgency to respond to the issues identified by the OLA and believe that the intent of this language is right on, we urge you to remove the language until your study group has had time to do its work. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Doan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Erin Doan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I'm coming to you today on behalf of board members to share a few messages, some of which I will cut short based on Ms. Chris's testimony. First, I would just like to say that we're thrilled at the prospect of a statewide job board. We can't think of a greater way to get involved in making sure that teachers are aware of where great openings are within the state and the ability to serve students. So we're excited about that work. Thank you for including that in your bill. Beyond that, in echoing comments that you've heard earlier today, we are concerned about the timing of the shift in funding to create an educator licensing account. We would like to see specifically that that provision moves to something that follows the appointment and the work of your appointed task force to reconsider the governance and the implementation of teacher licensing. We do believe that students and teachers will be better served through this redesign of teacher licensing and are grateful that they will be at the table through a variety of different stakeholder groups to examine the expectations of their professional credential. The board also believes that this financial restructuring does not support the resources currently for the Board of Teaching, FOSA, and educator licensing. We are continuing to negotiate and to ask questions with staff that have been working on the bill to make sure that the numbers are allowing for the work of all three entities to continue while the task force is in operation. I look forward to continuing those conversations in the weeks ahead. During the last session, the board came to you with evidence that their operational costs were at $745,000 annually. And while we appreciated that our $718,000 base was continued this last year, we are unable to maintain basic services under that amount for this year. We are currently looking at staff furloughs for the months of May and June, and right now are concerned about how that might implement or how that might affect the implementation of the ideas surrounding the task force. Again, we look forward to continuing those conversations with you. The Office of the Legislative Auditor gave a number of suggestions throughout their report. And at this point, I'm going to cut my list or laundry list short to just say, while we definitely appreciate the majority of the suggestions that are there, again, the timing is problematic. Many of the questions Ms. Christ raised are the questions that we have. So how would board staff be able to take on some of the responsibilities that have been shifted in this suggested language without any of the resources or the restructuring of governance that would need to accompany that? Again, we would ask that that change take place perhaps following the task force recommendations. And then finally, just a couple of misunderstandings, perhaps, about the role of a professional standards board. We are delighted at the number of provisions that have addressed teacher shortage, providing funding or loan forgiveness to teacher preparation programs. There are a number of references to the approval of those preparation programs that do address the Board of Teaching, but there are others that also give the approval of those programs to the Office of Higher Education or to the Commissioner. And we would just like to continue those conversations to help make sure that program preparation, where it applies to teacher licensure, that program approval is committed to the work of the board. And then finally, another piece that we have supported and continue to support is the language in Article 2, Section 20, surrounding Montessori teacher licensure. That provision is definitely supported in theory, in thought, by the board. We did notice, though, that there is just a very technical change that would need to be made to allow us to address the teacher licensure for Montessori teachers. Right now, the language includes the word waiver, which is something that can only be issued to a licensed teacher. Hence, we're not getting to the solution that we're seeking in helping to provide a credential for teachers in those settings. We would need that waiver language to change to one-year professional license that allows those teachers to teach within Montessori settings. Again, thank you for your continued consideration and your work on behalf of Minnesota's educators. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. All right. I think there were a couple of people who we were perhaps in the Senate who have come over. Is Mr. Santa here? Mr. Santa, if you want to come down. Yeah. And then I think we'll go. I think Mr. Dunham is still in the Senate, so we'll go with you for now, Mr. Santa. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tony Sonnet, and I am the CEO of the Sonnet Foundation. And I just wanted to thank you for providing funding in the education bill. This will help us lower racial disparities by recruiting and training diverse staff that will provide as education and behavioral interventionists while providing while acting as role models, holding students accountable. At the same time, we're going to improve their grades. We're going to make sure they come to school more often and be positive citizens. And we hope to do this in St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. So thank you again for believing in us, and we won't let you down.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. All right. I had a couple of other people who indicated they wanted to testify. Jim Bartholomew, Grace Kelleher. Welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. We'd like to start by also thanking you for your time and commitment to doing what's in the best interest of Minnesota students and for developing a strong and balanced bill. To help avoid a meeting this evening, I'll just highlight very briefly a few items. The options you're making available in Article 2 to address concerns with the new HLC or Higher Learning Commission requirements will help alleviate those concerns, with a Northwest Regional Partnership serving as a potential model for others. We also support your strategy for responding to the Legislative Auditor's Report on teacher licensure and addressing concerns about teacher shortages. The provisions in Article 2 that ask MNSCU to work with MDE in identifying career and college-ready benchmarks on our MCAs are a great step towards reducing the need for post-secondary remediation. The Parents' Right Directory in Article 2, Section 37 will make information more accessible to everyone. And while the expanded list of eligible uses for compensatory revenue in Article 1 makes a lot of sense, we'd ask that you not eliminate the requirement that revenue generated by certain students no longer be used for their benefit. Just last year, the allocation was reduced from 90% to 50%, and we should give that some time to see what impact it has. In regard to Article 6 and early education, allowing charter schools to provide school readiness programs is good, as are the changes you're proposing with the Parent Aware and related scholarships. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your commitment, and we look forward to working with you throughout the year.
Thank
you. Ms. Kelleher.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I just like to say, as I saw our target, my heart just sank. I thought, there's just no way good things can come from a zero target. And let me tell you, I'm nicely surprised. I give the committee credit for being resourceful in coming up with things. We especially appreciate the teacher shortage information. I think we spent $12 million on different initiatives, and that's a game changer. When we came into session, we knew we had a critical problem finding teachers around the state, and you really put it forward. And I could name all 10 provisions, but I hope you know them by heart anyway, and they're a game changer. So we want to thank you for those. We also want to support your language on unrequested leave. We support the equity funding. We also appreciate the ability to move school funds around in our budget. We like Representative Slocum's paperwork reduction for special education. We think that's great. We like the broadband investment. And I particularly, as I read the language about school buses and having a mobile a broadband piece in a school bus who have the longest distance to go, what a wonderful idea. And create it. And last but not least, we're very happy to see the mental health grants. We've really heard from our superintendents from around the state that mental health continues to be a growing concern in Minnesota schools. With that, we only have really two issues we've got concerns over. We're a little bit concerned that the discipline working group has gotten so large. We're up to, at my count, 33 members. And we're also, and you asked me for what we didn't like. We're a little disheartened that we didn't see any additional money for TDNE and QCOMP to blend together. But we had a tough target. Nice work, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Appreciate it. Mr. Downham.
Madam Chair,
I hope you didn't run.
No. Madam Chair, I apologize. Right. Too many committees in a short amount of time. Josh Downham with Minneapolis Public Schools, and actually I'm also wearing my Minnesota Reading Corps hat. And I again want to echo Ms. Kelleher's comments. Thank you. With a difficult target, you have done many great things. And I want to start with Reading Corps and Representative Peggy Bennett in particular. Thank her for her leadership in getting Reading Corps more broadly throughout the state. So the $1.5 million is going to allow us to expand in those three areas that we testified around. So in Greater Minnesota, in some of the Head Start programs, meeting more of the demand from schools and, from pre-K programs, and then lastly, in the licensed family child care. And then putting my Minneapolis Public Schools hat on, I also want to thank you as well, Madam Chair, for coming and Mr. Withers from coming to Minneapolis, North Side and South Side, visiting with the staff at the schools. They're still talking about it, frankly. And it was, I think it was great to have you there and see what happens. And as you heard, a lot of the unfortunate situations where, so few of those kids start in kindergarten and actually get all the way through fifth grade, less than 10%. It's really tough. To have that with that lack of consistency. But to that, I'm very happy that the School Link mental health grants are in this bill. That will go a long way to help. The Representative Peterson also had a piece on some of the comp ed flexibility, and I appreciate you including that first part. The one piece I would say would like to see removed is related to the Pathway 2 cap on scholarships. As the report showed, the students with the lowest incomes were actually served by Pathway 2. And I know those are the ones that Representative Creech is very interested in getting in, and we'd like to see that cap removed. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Down. Appreciate it. All right. A few other people have indicated they'd like to testify. So if you are here, Ms. Herr with the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans to come down. And I understand there's a representative from Parents United who'd like to testify. Valerie Dosland. And then after those folks, we'll have Mr. Uni from the department. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sia Herr, and I am the Executive Director of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. As you know, the Council is statutorily charged with the responsibility of advising you on behalf of almost 300,000 strong, a community of more than 260,000 strong Minnesotans descended from 40 Asian nations. The reason why I'm here today is really because we are a bit concerned about the data disaggregation provision in House File 3858. Before I go any further, let me just say that the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans supports the policy of collecting and reporting data disaggregation. In fact, it was us that issued one of the first reports on the importance of data disaggregation. In 2012, we issued a report titled Facts Not Myth, in which we disaggregated MCA data by language spoken at home, ethnicity, income level, English proficiency, and mobility. Through this analysis, we provided new understandings about the academic achievement and performance of Asian Pacific students here in the state of Minnesota. The findings from the disaggregated data directly counter the widely held national narrative and what we in the Asian American community call a misconception that all Asian Pacific students are performing at levels well above other minority students and only slightly below white students, and thus were not as deserving of additional support. In reality, refugee experience, low income, English learning, and highly mobile Asian Pacific students experienced significant educational disparities and in some cases had lower proficiency rates than other racial groups. So again, let me remind the committee and anyone who is paying attention that we at the Asian Council support the policy recommendation of collecting disaggregated data. We also thank the powers that be or the individuals that worked on this specific policy proposal for inserting refugee experience into the language of the bill. However, having looked at this bill repeatedly within our council, we know that the trick lies in the implementation phase. As the policy proposal is currently written, we believe that the request requires more time to think through the implementation. For example, lines 22.19 through 22.20 identifies the Karen community. Some of you or many of you have heard me testify before, and in those testimonies I have brought up the Karen community again and again. Today I share with you again that the Karen is one of our largest and newest refugee communities from Burma, also known as Myanmar. However, this is not the only community from, this is not the only refugee group from the nation of Myanmar. The U.S. Census identifies this group as part of the Burmese community. Here in the state of Minnesota, we are also home to another group of Karen, another group of Burmese refugees, and that's the Karen-Ni community. That community is up and coming as well, and we expect that by the time the 2020 census arrives, that community will be 1,000 strong, if not larger. In Minnesota, another group of refugees that you as policymakers should be keeping your eyes on is the group from Nepal, and it's what we know as our Bhutanese community. This community, according to the 2010 census, had by the time the 2010 census came, this community had not yet reached the 1,000 community member threshold. Yet, what we know today is that between 2008 and 2015, Minnesota accepted 1,033 primary arrivals from the Bhutanese refugee community. According to someone who works within the Department of Health, specifically in the Refugee and International Health Program, Minnesota is one of the leading states in the number of secondary arrivals coming to settle here from other states where they were initially resettled in. So we feel relatively confident in saying that we have more than 1,033 initially settled Bhutanese refugees here in the state of Minnesota. However, there have been close to 85,000 of them settled in the U.S. as of the end of the year 2015. Due to secondary and tertiary migration, we expect that this community is larger than the 1,033 that we resettled.
And Ms. Herr, I'm going to have you wrap up.
Yep. Having said all of that, as the agency that is charged with the responsibility of advising you and advocating on behalf of the community, our best advice to you at this point in time is to ask you to give us the opportunity to work with MDE, our communities, and other stakeholders, and have us come back next year with recommendations on how the state should effectively and meaningfully standardize the practice of collecting and reporting disaggregated data. Having said that, if this advice from our council is not an option for you as a committee, we ask that, due to the sensitive nature of this issue, you consider our second advice, and that is that you delay the effective date to the 2017-2018 school year so that we may be able to work with MDE and other stakeholders to ensure that when the state of Minnesota does move toward data disaggregation, that we do so successfully. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dolson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dolsland, and I'm wearing a number of hats today. So first off, representing the intermediate school districts, I would like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for their support of the professional development bill to provide funding to intermediates and the co-ops who serve federal setting for special ed students. That support goes a long way and will do a lot of good things to help these programs work with their teachers on professional development. So thank you. The superintendents are very grateful for your support. Wearing my other hat of the Minnesota Community Ed Association, I also would like to thank the chair. We provided some feedback to the chair on the Early Learning Coordination Fund, and then some of those changes we suggested are incorporated in the proposal. We would like to continue to work with the committee on trying to put some more parameters around it, but we are appreciative of the thoughtfulness with which she considered our recommendations. And then I just want to clarify one thing regarding the ABE funding. So the way our funding formula works is programs become part of a consortium. And so the three programs that are coming to the legislature to request this additional funding could become part of the ABE consortium and receive the funding that the other ABE programs are receiving. So I can't speak as to why they are not belonging to the consortium, but they are able to access this money if they join the consortium. And then lastly, just to reiterate the concerns you've heard about eliminating or freezing Pathway 2. As the Early Learning Scholarship Report showed, 95% of the families who access scholarships were able to access the scholarship, use the scholarship in a program of their choice. And I understand that there are concerns that Pathway 2 is perceived that it's not parent choice. I think the evaluation shows otherwise. And I know that some questions have been raised about portability. I have spoken to PASSER and other groups, and the Community Ed Association is certainly happy to sit down and try to resolve that issue. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Just really quickly, Madam Chair, and I didn't realize this was going to come up right now. I would have warned Valerie, but I do want to put on record that I did talk to David Gaither, and he actually has a letter from the Minneapolis Consortium that says even if he did join, that it would not necessarily mean that he would get equal payment for the ABE services. So there's something that's not quite awry with just saying that you can join the consortium if you don't actually get paid anymore for the same services. So I just want to put that on the record.
Thank you. Welcome. And then Mr. Uni, you're up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Shauna Headland, and I'm here today with Parents United for Public Schools. The experience and the lens that I see these issues through is as a parent of Minneapolis school children, a former teacher of adjudicated youth, and a public health professional in adolescent health. Thank you for the many provisions in this bill that support excellence in Minneapolis, in general in public schools. My concern is with two projects that it also eliminates over time, and I would like to speak to those. The first is the Minnesota Student Survey. I attended a meeting at Minnesota Department of Health yesterday who released STI data just yesterday that shows a marked increase in STI rates among teens. And we as stakeholders in adolescent health came together to discuss what our response would be. And our response as a group was to use the Minnesota Student Survey data in order to target further prevention to help quell what is becoming an epidemic among young people. That's just one example of how that data is useful. It is a benefit to public health to target prevention, and that's advantageous for many reasons. It also allows a preventative approach rather than a reactive approach to adolescent health risks. As we say in public health, negative outcomes are expensive, but prevention is cheap. In the same vein, target approaches cost less. We can blanket youth with health preventive messages, and we will, but it will cost more in lives and in dollars to do so. Data of this type, with the kind of longevity that the survey has, is invaluable to our kids' mental and physical health. The other thing I wanted to speak to quickly was the regional centers of excellence, and very much appreciate one further year of funding of those. Yesterday I came from a meeting as well at MDE, hearing stakeholders speak the praises of the regional centers of excellence. In the words of some of our parents and educators that we work with at Parents United, that benefit have schools that benefit from what they provide, it is how we make applicable to educators that which the world's best workforce legislation provides. MDE has been listening to stakeholders about how happy they are with the waiver, because it moved the Minnesota waiver that moved us from a compliance and reporting system based on No Child Left Behind to one that's more of a comprehensive support system and a continuous improvement system. And they attribute this to the regional centers of excellence. So we appreciate your past support of these efforts, and please, we would encourage you to consider continuation of these essential projects.
Thank you. Mr. Uni.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Department of Education. First of all, we want to thank the committee for including a lot of the policy language from the governor's policy bill in here. We think it's, as I stated before, this is pretty important for a lot of technical fixes up and down the board. And thanks for including various of the MDE priorities, governor's priorities in the funding portion. We would say, first and foremost, with the teacher workforce, thank you for taking some of the provisions, the Minnesota Teacher Future Teachers Grant Program. We know there's a portion of funding for that. Would want to express some concern about the number of programs that are going towards teacher workforce. We feel that it's possible that consolidating some of the efforts into a few greater efforts might create more effective use of dollars, and then from an administrative view, it might allow MDE to more effectively distribute the funding to teacher shortage areas and schools in need. But again, we want to say that the efforts to address teacher workforce shortage are very well taken. Next, I would say thank you for the QComp fix, the $240,000 to make Ricori and Buffalo, Hanover, Montrose whole. We really appreciate that. Other provisions that not necessarily in the governor's bill, but we think are very well taken, are the reading initiatives and the mental health school-linked mental health grants. We do feel that maybe the school-linked mental health grants, like the program, may be better placed in the DHS budget as they were in prior years. We want to say that we wanted to on discipline, we do appreciate the investment in PBIS that we think will go a long ways. We're working with about 543 schools now, and we think this will get us into 400 or 500 more. So thank you very much. On the other discipline language, we want to continue working on this, and we, you know, ask for some of the more challenging provisions where there's been some discussion around this. We would advocate for this to be taken forward in the discipline working group. On the provisions about data, we've heard a lot of testimony about the importance of capturing different groups and disaggregating data. We would say, and I know some have spoken against this, but MDE's position would be that we don't want to put the cart before the horse, and we want to wait for what the requirements are from the federal government under the ESSA guidelines, and in a comprehensive manner task what we can do, where the resources are, and what we can best capture. On the revenue flexibility portions, I've testified before, we would not be in favor of the general education revenue flexibility, as it adversely would impact the allocation of basic skills revenue and gifted and talented revenue, and then the moving to 100% flexibility on the compensatory revenue. We feel that has a lack of accountability. I know we've spoken with the author of that provision, and I've spoken in front of the committee, so we really want to get to some accountability measures. On the unrequested leaves of absence, the governor and the commissioner's position on this has been publicly stated for several years now, and they haven't changed in terms of not wanting to make any changes in that section. On technology, we would have liked to have seen the fixes for the department's mainframe and security provisions. As you know, we put out about $16 billion every biennium. We have a very outdated system. We're in dire need to update that system so that we can continue without flaws to put that money out the door. We also wanted to say that with the elimination of the special education online funding and the Odyssey Fund, we're still required to do the special education online fund. We'd like to see that funding there and the funding to create that program. We really think we'll hit that reduction of paperwork by using the system to inform the teachers this is exactly what you have to do and pre-populating forms so they're not stuck going into the night redoing work that they've already had to do. So we would express some caution in that area. On early education, we want to say thank you for the Metro Deaf fix that's in the governor's budget. I think that's long been needed. We would say reiterate our stance on the elimination of the Pathway 2 programs, the portability. We want to met with the author and talked about this. Want to say that funding is necessary for capacity building at four-star rated programs, and that does go for parental choice. We would want to say to ask to rethink about the pushback on the implementation of requiring districts or providers to have 3- and 4-star ratings. We believe that's crucial to increasing quality for the access to these programs. And I just have a few more items, and then I'll wrap up. Just as was mentioned before, we want to express caution on the language restricting the Minnesota Student Survey. We would only be able to do it on student engagement and safety, so we'd lose a lot of information on things like tobacco use that I think a lot of parents are very interested in seeing, and alcohol use that a lot of parents are interested in seeing, and policymakers that are interested in seeing as well. On the administration issues, we think there's a lot of work, about $17 million in grants, but not any funding for administering those. We require funding for RFPs if we have to do it, as well as monitoring and oversight to make sure that the money is being spent as it should. And so that takes staff time and sometimes extra staff. We would strongly oppose the cuts to the regional centers of excellence. Those are crucial for the advancement of priority and focus schools, our most struggling schools, and those help schools all around the state. So this is in greater Minnesota, suburban, urban, all over. And then the language that was included from Representative Howell's bill on having MDE cover the shortfalls and any funding, should there be any shortfalls for districts, that would punish MDE for any fluctuations in enrollment that MDE has no control over. We understand the sentiment about maybe seeing MDE having some accounting issues, but this would be overly punitive, especially when we're stretching our budget very thin to cover a lot of the programs that help serve Minnesota students and schools. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Right, thank you, Mr. Rooney. Other people who wish to testify? I've gone through the list of people who have indicated they wish to testify. Mr. Heller, come on down. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? All right. Welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Loon, and Committee for Finance and the House of Representatives. My name is Rick Keller, unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and Print Disabled. I brought on today a radio. It's only about a 6-second recording that I took this morning. I'd like to express basically what it says on the radio. It talks about how it's for specifically for the people who have blindness and print disabilities.
This is the Minnesota Radio Talking Book Network, with studios in St. Paul. RTV broadcasts of print media to Minnesota and the nation are intended exclusively for the use of people with blindness and print disabilities.
We're not quite sure who people are with print disabilities, but this is a closed-circuit radio station that people that don't effectively acquire, or shall I say, understand the printed word. I do have a little thing with a handout from it. If it's okay, I'll hand it on if anybody's interested in listening to this for temporary, just for the information. I come here today to speak on 3066 bill, and I guess I'd like to start to thank this committee for their hard work as we look at the word opportunity added to the Higher Education Act in 2008 and also in the Workforce Innovation Act of 2014. The word opportunity basically equates the American Disability Act to provide a level playing field for all individuals. And one of the key elements of this, I believe, is called the best workforce, and that has to do with outcomes for all learners. The IDA, Individual Disability Education Act 2004, identified in a mission statement three outcomes for all learners. They have to have some form of higher education or education. They're employed and working, and they're independent. The piece regarding Minnesota Statute 16E03 has to do with, for instance, this radio. Provide stuff in a oral format. Read the newspapers out loud in the morning. Talk to periodicals. And I acquire information on it, and I can apply it and build upon it. I think it's an important piece that we really look seriously at how people acquire information effectively. And if the printed word is not natural, that oral language is. I think when you look ahead in your current bill, I think you could improve a specific area. One of it was I had a correspondence with the Minnesota Department of Education this year and Department of Health and State Auditor. I believe Adash is here. I don't know if the chair is willing to have him yield to the question. However, I asked two specific questions. He got back to this committee electronic format. I don't see it posted online for the public to review. I think it's relevant for the public to know that these documents are fully accessible. If it's JAWS or Adobe Reader or whatever software, that they can know what's going on here. The letter that he sent out was dated February 4th. I responded to that a few days after and sent it out to the committee. And basically, the vagueness of that letter, I would recommend an amendment for tomorrow regarding the metric. I had said that there's a common thread that runs through most all the assessments, frankly. It's called Lexile, which is found on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. However, I don't believe Adash was unaware, it was with the MCAs, but with the other formative assessments like NWA, ACT, and SAT. However, I would suggest an amendment to that. Also, that has to do...
Mr. Heller, I'm going to have you wrap because we are over time and the next committee is going to come in.
Okay, and then if I'd like to go to page 5.4 under the gifted. And that goes to page 25. I think it's a very important piece as we work on Minnesota best workforce that we should include these individuals into that programming, because if anybody has an opportunity, they're gifted too, including the twice exceptional, and hopefully I would appreciate that those individuals that continue to move ahead for teachers. They should consider any teacher that has accommodation and graduated on time should be included and broken out that they graduated in a timely manner, because if they had appropriate accommodations coming out of K-12, they would have graduated on time in higher education. Great. I think it's a very relevant piece to that.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We're going to have to call that a day because the next committee people are moving in, but we appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. Committee members, so we will not be returning tonight. I didn't see any other hands for public testimony. If you have amendments, please file them by 5 o'clock. And I will actually be in my office the rest of the day. If anyone has questions, I'm sure Mr. Withers would be available as well. And, of course, our nonpartisan staff. So thank you. Committee is adjourned.